La Jolla, California, UC San Diego Athletics presents TritonCast, the podcast for the UC San Diego Tritons. Here are your hosts, Jeff Toriel and Jenny Stevens.
Welcome to episode 3 of TritonCast, the podcast for UC San Diego Athletics. We would like to also extend a special welcome to listeners on TuneIn. Our podcast can be heard on TuneIn each week.
In today's Triton Spotlight, ESPN broadcaster Steve Quist joins us. He has become an expert in the San Diego sports scene since moving to the area more than 20 years ago. Steve has been a sports anchor for KUSI and KFMB, and his career features nearly 30 years of play-by-play experience, including a stint with the San Diego Padres. For the last several years, Steve has called games for ESPN, and he's also broadcast the UC San Diego men's and women's basketball games for the last 4 years.
But first, we go around campus. Our series on Welcome to the Big West concludes today. All 11 stories are now online at ucsdtritons.com. In addition, our Between Two Zooms continues with Season 2. And coming soon, we'll chat with recent graduates Sri Manoharan from men's tennis and Natalie Sadek from women's soccer. And we also have a new look on our website, as the new look ucsdtritons.com is here as well.
Yeah, it's a great new look to the website. You definitely won't want to miss that. Now, here's our Triton Spotlight conversation with the voice of the Tritons, ESPN broadcaster Steve Quist.
So tell us how you got your start in broadcasting.
Well, let's see. When I was actually in high school, believe it or not, it was a little town called Fullerton, California. It's in the middle of Orange County. And they had a community television station like Cox Channel 3 that actually did the high school games for my high school, Fullerton High School, and by small town, like 100,000, but in Orange County. And they were looking for a sideline guy. And I said, heck, I'll do it. So I was sidelined for the basketball team. And I couldn't do it for football because I was playing in the games or like sitting the bench. At least I was dressed out for the games. So I did basketball, and then it sort of led to, like you, I wanted to go to Syracuse like every other broadcaster, but I couldn't. So after I got in, I went off to the University of Arizona, and there were plenty of opportunities because no one, like, you know, in Syracuse, right, everyone wants to be a broadcaster. Right. But in Arizona, nobody really did. So, you know, instead of being on the student station, which I was on for about, I don't know, the first 6 months I was there, before you knew it, like I was at the ABC station, and then I was on the number one talk radio station, 940 KNST with like Rush Limbaugh and all that, and doing afternoon updates. So that's sort of how it all got started, late 80s, early 90s.
So you went to college with that in mind. Is that something you'd wanted to do since a young age?
Yes. I actually wanted to be a Major League Baseball broadcaster ever since I can remember, when I lived in Little Silver, New Jersey, and with my grandfather would watch the Yankees, like Phil Rizzuto and all, calling those games, Bill White. I gotta be a broadcaster, because I knew pretty early on I wasn't going to be a player. Although, that was my first thing. I want to be like Reggie Jackson, but I couldn't do that. So then I decided to be a broadcaster, and then eventually did make it to the majors, which was kind of cool. Wish I could have stayed longer, but you know, at least I got my cup of coffee.
So you're going to college, you're in Tucson, you're on air and you're still going to class, or in theory going to class. How did you kind of balance all that?
The cool thing was that all the classes, you know, were in the morning, and then the talk show that I was going to host was at 6 o'clock at night. It was from like 6 to 7, Sports Talk Tucson. And then the afternoon news, you know, this was like those traditional days, right, where you let Rush Limbaugh, and I don't even remember who was after Rush. It would have been another conservative talk show host in those days. And then right into the afternoon news at 4 o'clock. So I would shoot on over at 4 o'clock to do the updates. And then there was a gentleman who wanted to become a minor league baseball announcer, and it was his job to call Arizona baseball. And he actually got a job in Quad City. So they needed someone to do baseball play by play, and I was a natural fit. So my second semester of my sophomore year, I was actually the radio voice of the University of Arizona baseball team. I'd just coming off a national championship a few years ago, and had like, you know, the Scott Erickson's and JT Snow's and all that. So, um, So I was the main guy. And the cool thing back then was that, you'll probably recall, is before all these NCAA rules and regulations, if you were like a team in Tucson, Arizona, you could start the season in January 4th because the weather was so nice.
Right.
And you'd bring out all these teams, right? So that overlapped with the guy who, Brian Jeffries, who was the play-by-play voice and still is of the U of A. And Arizona had a great basketball team that would always go deep in the tournament. A couple of years I was there, they were in the Final Four. And so they needed a second guy, right? So a lot of times I was on my own all of January, February, March until the basketball team was done. So, you know, I got paid like, I think it was $150 to do the game by myself and $75 if I did it with Brian. So think you're just a fraternity kid. You're your sophomore year of college. And if he wasn't there, I was making like $450 a weekend. And that's like, that's good money nowadays. Imagine doing that in 1990 when you're a college student and literally you could live on $40 a week in Tucson, Arizona. So,
were you traveling with the team?
I was traveling with the team. We only traveled to Friday, Saturday, Sunday, six pack games. At the time, it was not the Pac-10 or the Pac-12. Like the Oregon schools and Washington played themselves, and it wasn't part of, you know, there was no tournament or anything. So there was just the six teams, the, you know, Cal, Stanford, USC, UCLA, and Arizona State were in one league. And so we played in the six pack. So yeah, we traveled to those sites.
What an experience. I got to imagine as a sophomore, being a part of that. It's something that, probably you had to learn pretty quickly how to separate being a sophomore in college versus trying to be a professional.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. I never took myself too seriously. I mean, as you know, I still don't, but, you know, it was, if I remember correctly, like in those days too, they had a network that stretched all the way to San Diego, California. So people might remember the old radio station, 1130 KSDO, but they on the weekends would cover Arizona baseball games. So I was broadcast on this like 10 station network. And then there was a big sports station in Phoenix. So it was, you know, the people in Tucson knew me, but I got a lot of exposure in some other big markets. And I know that the San Diego station, they had a lot of players from San Diego. So their parents enjoyed, you know, listening to it, to games on 1130. So it was, you know, I mean, I listened back to some of those tapes and I'm sure my voice was like up here and all that. But I learned pretty quickly. And the first ever series I did actually was at UCLA and like Dave Roberts was playing for the Bruins at the time. So it's interesting to look back. Sometimes I'll go back and look at not the score sheets, but sometimes the game notes. I've saved a few of the game notes and just to see, like, you know, all the guys that who they are now compared to who they were then, was fascinating.
Were you getting feedback? I mean, was someone critiquing your work or helping you get better? Or was it really just, hey, this is what I heard when I was a kid on the radio listening to baseball, so this is how I'm going to try to do it?
Yeah. So, I mean, there would be some from the sports director would give me some critiques, but mostly like I actually sat there, you'll love this, with like one of those big boom boxes. Remember we used to have those big boom boxes?
Of course. Where you could,
with cassette tapes, and you could like, if you got one cassette, you could dub off another one. And so I would just sit there with it, with the antenna up to 940 KNST, and it was a great signal. And I would just record it. And then once it was over, you know, all my fraternity brothers were like, hey man, let's go party. And I'd be like, no, you know what? I'm going to sit down and listen to this 2.5-3 hour baseball game. And so just writing down all the stuff that I thought I stunk at, and then tried to get better the very next day. And I got better in a hurry because that led right to going into AAA baseball by the time I was a senior for the Tucson Toros, which was the AAA affiliate of the Astros. So I got critique from them, and I would get some critiques from a guy named Mario Impemba, who was the voice of the Toros, the AAA team, who just had a nice long 18-year run with the Tigers and a year with the Red Sox and like 5 years with the Angels. So, so he would give me a lot of critiques too. And there was a lot of guys in the market too. I forgot about this. All those games would be played like in March on the radio in March. And you had three spring training teams back in Tucson at those days, where you had the White Sox, the Indians, the Rockies were there. And then the Diamondbacks came along. So you had a lot of like a Tom Brenneman who might hear and give you a few pointers. So it was kind of cool. I owe a lot of my success to all the people that came through Tucson, Arizona that I, you know, I can still continue to stay in touch with, you know, 30 years after doing that job.
Wow. That's wild. And it's not something that I'm sure you went into it thinking that, hey, you know, when I get to March that Some major league broadcasters are going to hear me, but sure enough, that's a nice perk of being where you were in Arizona at that time of year.
Yeah, I remember. I remember like Tom Hamilton, the voice of the Indians, had some nice things to say because I would, you know, when I had an opportunity, I would go over and like introduce myself. Or I briefly had like a 3-day internship with the Indians when they were at spring training there. But I had to choose between continuing with the Indians or taking this job and going to UCLA, if I remember correctly, and doing that first series that I talked about. And I was like, hey, man, I better err on the side of getting some reps. So, yeah, there was a lot of guys that I grew to know and I still know to this day. And then it was kind of fun to be their peers, you know, all those years later.
So as a senior, you were doing the Toros games, the AAA team?
Just right after I got out of college. I graduated early because that was my plan. I graduated in 3.5 years because what normally happens in your road to the major leagues, you know, everybody who was telling me how to get there said, look, you got to start in the minors and you got to, you know, the jobs become available in January and you need to sell in January and February and March, right? And then in April, you get to go and be with the team. So I'm like, okay. So I exited college a half semester earlier and wound up, it worked out perfectly because then the Toros needed a second guy. And so I kind of bypassed single A and I actually had two opportunities to go to single A teams, one in Beloit, Wisconsin, another in Palm Springs, California. And I was excited about it, but then they said, hey, look, you can come for $750 and do the middle three innings of a AAA team. And I'm like, again, I'm like, I gotta take that. Right. So I did that for a year. Technically I was a senior, but I had already graduated with my degree.
So you're doing the Toros, the middle innings of the Toros games in what would have been your senior year, but now you're done.
Yeah.
And what else did you do? Were you doing other work for the team at that time?
Yes, I was actually the media relations director. I took over doing the game notes. And the reason why I sort of did that was Mario and Pemba, him and his wife were having their first child. And back in those days, road trips, you know, there were Canadian teams in the Pacific Coast League, and there was a big road trip right at the start of her due date, like 12. It was a 12-day trip to like Calgary and Vancouver and Tacoma. So they were like, look, we need someone to do this. So then for a while I became the number one guy for a month, right? When he was on paternity leave. But then he was like, look, I want to be with my wife. I need to be with my wife. Can you take off some of the other duties? And so I was seasonal and I was doing the game notes. And then I don't know if I've ever told you this before, but I was the mascot a couple times. I was Tuffy the Toro.
There's got to be photos of that somewhere.
Yeah. I don't know how many I had with my head off, but a unique story in Tucson was that the general manager, like I was getting paid nothing, $750 a month. It broke out to $333.33 after taxes every 2 weeks, right? So it's like I was living on a friend's couch for free. And they said, hey, look, we need you to go out after you're done with the sixth inning, between the seventh inning and do the dash for cash, you know, where they put Tuffy at home plate. And then some like little kid at second base and you got to let him win. And I was like, look, man, I'll do it to the assistant general manager. But if I beat that kid, I want the Sizzler gift card that you were going to give him. Or the other one was Peter Piper Pizza. And then there was another place. There was like a third Famous Sam's or something. So I said, if I beat him, and they're like, yeah, that's fine. If you beat him. So I'm telling you, man, I would take off running and this poor little kid, right? Round third, supposed to let him win, but I'm like, the only way I'm going to eat is if I can beat this kid. So I knew how to race right through, just bust right through every third base coach or third baseman who was trying to hold me back. And I would win half the time. And then they would give me the crowd would boo. Everybody would be angry, but then I'd get to eat at Sizzler. And there were like six Sizzlers in Tucson. So every night that I won, I'd have to go to a different one so that they didn't catch you what was happening. But you know, some days I ate like royalty and the other days I was at Peter Piper Pizza. But, you know, the things you do to advance your career, right?
That's right. And when you're just starting out and you're making that little money, you've got to do whatever you got to do to make ends meet. I got to ask you this. I mean, Tucson in the summertime, was that costume air conditioned?
No. And so what I would do is, I'm glad you asked, like I would hide in the beer cooler like every other inning. It was awful. And at night, it wasn't too, too bad because usually the monsoons would like cool off the weather and, you know, would rain, right? And they needed to put the tarp out. That was another thing we had to do and then pull the tarp back on. And so it would be 70 degrees at night. But since I was in the office, they would send me to like Costco when it was 104 degrees. So Costco would say, hey, we need, you know, so you see the sign flippers now, right? So in those days they needed celebrity sign flippers. And so they go to Costco, put the costume on and hold up, you know, $1 pizza. And I would have to do that for like 3 straight hours without a break. And that was just deadly. Cause what's underneath that paper mache bullhead is like a baseball helmet, right? And it's all affixed to this baseball helmet. So you're just in there. Like, I mean, I would lose like 20 pounds. And, you know, they give me like an extra $20 and that was that. So
we're talking with Steve Quist on TritonCast. So this was summer of 92, right?
Would have been summer of 93.
Okay, yes, 93. And then what? So the season ends and then what?
So the season ends and there was 2 of us in the office. And there was a better sales like intern and me, and they were like, look, we can't afford to keep you on. We're going to keep the guy who is the sales guy who now actually lives in San Diego and is still a good friend of mine. He's completely out of the business. But so I said, all right, I understand. And I went looking for a job, and I got another A-ball job in Beloit, Wisconsin. And I went home to gather my stuff, and home for me was Fullerton, California. And we had the huge Northridge earthquake in 1994, if you guys remember.
Right.
And that shook up the place. And I just told my parents, I'm like, look, I hate to leave you, but I got to get out of here. I'm going to go to Beloit early to do the Brewers announcing, and I'm going to stop through Tucson. I'm going to stay there for a week. And I had some tapes, some audition tapes that I'd done during my internship at the ABC affiliate, because I was like, maybe I'll be a sports anchor. And I took those into the CBS affiliate. And the next thing you know, they had an opening like when I was there, and they hired me right on the spot. And the CBS in Tucson just said, don't go to Beloit, come here. And at the time, like Beloit was paying like $800 a month. And the CBS affiliate, I think, was paying like $24,500. So I was like, wow, I'm going to be rich, man. And so moved back in the fraternity house, took the job as the weekend sports anchor, and then stayed there until 2000, and still got to do the Toros middle innings on nights that I was off, or Saturday and Sunday when I had a chance to do it. So it kind of worked out perfectly.
So you packed up from mom and dad's, you're going to Wisconsin. You never made it. You end up in Tucson as a television sports anchor. And at that time, local news and sports on local news was a really big deal.
Yes, it was.
And you're living for nothing or virtually nothing, and you're making, relatively speaking, a decent amount of money. Was there an effort on your part during that time to kind of get other play-by-play opportunities, or were you content being on local television?
Well, so then I formulated a plan. I was like, you know, I'm sitting there, it's like 1994, and I'm like, okay, I'm a little bit off this plan of being a Major League Baseball guy, but here's what we'll do. The Toros loved me. And they were going to let me be the middle inning play-by-play guy, right? So I'm like, okay, I can fine-tune my tape. And now let's just change the plan a little bit. And I started looking around, and I'm like, where are some of the older announcers going to be, and how are teams hiring, right? And at the time, you really didn't have much of a chance when you were a AAA guy, right? You almost had more of a chance if you were already in the city that you were in when there was an opening and you had baseball experience, right? They would seem to go and get that guy. So I'm like, so I looked around and I go, San Diego, Jerry Coleman, man. I go, I don't know how long he'll continue to be on the air, but he's older. So let's get to San Diego as a weekend sports anchor, or any sort of sports anchor. And then let's continue to do the middle innings in minor league baseball and AAA. And then when Jerry Coleman decides to move aside, people are going to know you because you'll be at KUSI or wherever, and they're going to be, boom, Steve Quist is our guy. And it actually happened. It just didn't happen that way. It wasn't for Jerry Coleman, but instead it was for to back up Matt Vasgersian. And Matty V, after Marlon Pemba had left to go to the Angels, a couple of years later when I was working, Matt Vasgersian became the AAA guy for the Toros for a couple of years. And we all became really good friends, and I continued to do the middle three innings for him. So when he came to San Diego and I was in San Diego and he needed a backup, he goes, look no further than my guy, Steve Quist. And so I got that job. And then I was in the big leagues for my first 4 years.
So obviously, as you know better than most, but you can't kind of script your path in this business, and you have to be willing to go where the opportunities are. But it sounds like shortly after college, you had gotten in your mind that you wanted to be in San Diego specifically. So how did you actually get into this market?
So if anybody knows Paul Rudy at KUSI, he hired me to come to Tucson from Tucson. And we had a mutual friend who sadly was on that, on one of the airplanes that crashed into the World Trade Center on 9/11. He was our sports producer, Tom Pecorelli. And we had hired him from Sarasota, Florida, where Tom was, or where Paul Rudy was. And Paul was trying to, and this guy, Tom, was like one of the, I mean, he was genius. I mean, he was one of the most creative guys I've ever worked with. And so he was our producer. We were doing funny stuff. And Paul was trying to get out of Florida and to a bigger market and to a network. And so he would fly in like once every weekend. And in the room next to me, I'd hear them giggling, and they were doing all of Paul. Paul had a lot of shtick and funny stuff. And they were building with Tom this this resume to get him to the network, and they eventually got him to Fox. He was one of the big guys on Fox on the regionals when they first launched. And so I'd always poke my head in, and we got to know each other. And as luck would have it, an opening came up, and it came down to me and a guy from Iowa who had just been in Tucson. And I helped the guy out while the Iowa Hawkeyes were in town in Tucson. And he said, if I can ever help you, I will. And so he got the job in San Diego. And even though Paul was sort of pulling for me, the news director went with the other guy. And the other guy said, you know what? I'll take care of you. If I ever leave, you're going to be the first guy I'm going to call. And I thought, yeah, right, whatever. I've heard this song and dance before. And sure enough, the guy from Iowa originally was from Denver. And Denver called within 9 months of him getting to San Diego. And wow. He could not get out of his contract until he found his replacement. So Paul and Rod Mackey's his name from KUSA in Denver said, Steve Quist will come here and he'll be here in 2 weeks. And sure enough, they kept to their word. And before you know it, in August of 2000, with about 10 days notice, I was hired at KUSI.
So when you took the job at KUSI, now you're in the market where you wanted to be. Your eye is still on kind of the Padres long term, right?
Yeah.
Yes. How was adjustment to living in California on a professional sense? Obviously, you know, you grew up here, but you know, you're not quite at home, and now you're on your own. It's obviously a much more expensive market.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. So by then, in 2000, I had my wife Jennifer, and she was itching to get home because she's from Los Angeles, and then we had my son Matthew, who was about 9 months old, and we had bought a house in Tucson, Arizona, in like the nicest part for literally nothing, like $150,000. Our realtor was Brett Strom, who just was the pitching coach for the Houston Astros when they won the World Series not too long ago. So he had helped us get like a $50,000 profit on the house when we sold in 2000. So we had like, you know, we had a nice little down payment. We came to San Diego. The real estate prices hadn't really gone up yet. You could still get something in Rancho Bernardo in the mid 200s. So, you know, we bought that, and then that shot up, right? The market shot up. 2 years later, we were sitting on a $500,000 house. So then we got into the place that we're at now in Rancho Bernardo. So it wasn't too bad. We just timed it right. We would have never been able to come. 2 or 3 years later, we would have never been able to come, or 10 years later. I mean, I feel bad for the folks that are trying to get into the market now. So that's sort of how it happened. And then I got here, and there was pro teams, and like Ryan Leaf had just, you know, screamed at Jay Posner of the UT. You know, Mike Riley was still the head coach. The Chargers were here. The Padres were at Qualcomm Stadium. SDSU basketball was terrible. UCSD, I think, was Division III for 99-2000. Right. So, you know, a lot has changed since then. The goals were the old goals with the black and white colors in the IHL, or maybe the WHL or something, not in the league they're in now. So it was quite interesting to come during that era.
We're chatting with ESPN Steve Quist on this episode of TritonCast. And so now you're in San Diego. It's 2000. You're working at KUSI, still having that eye on the Padres, right? Hoping that opportunity will come, still wanting to get back into baseball and play-by-play. What happened next?
So I was on a real popular show on KUSI called the Pigskin Report, and it really launched my profile big time. And this is still in 2000. It's still a time when people are really relying on their local news. You know, there's no Twitter, there's no Facebook. As a matter of fact, when I started in 2000, I didn't even have a cell phone, for goodness sakes. We all had pagers, and they would page us from the assignment desk if they needed something. But there was a young man named Reggie Bush who was playing at Helix, and his quarterback was a guy named Alex Smith, and they were really an exciting team for Helix. And, you know, and sophomore year, everybody sort of knew that Reggie Bush was going to be an eventual Heisman Trophy winner and probably an NFL Hall of Famer. And you just saw that talent, right? And you knew Alex Smith was pretty special. You didn't know he was going to be an NFL guy. But so I sort of got on that beat with Reggie, and Reggie and I became, you know, good friends. And that show really just, I mean, the ratings were through the roof. And so my profile was really big. And I also had, you know, the Padres and the Chargers were sort of my beat as well. And plus we had a 10 o'clock, we were the only 10 o'clock newscast. We were the only 1 hour 10 o'clock newscast, right? So we had basically the 10:45 to 11 o'clock slot to ourselves when people still watch news. And, you know, we were on everything local and people took notice, and I met a lot of people. And before you know it, 2006 rolled around and Channel 4 had an opening. It was interesting. They had at the time in 2004, I take this back. So we'll go back 2 years. 2004, Channel 4 was doing like the local Toreros and Aztec football and basketball. And the Gulf War had just started. And Ted Leitner was doing the TV along with Tony Gwynn. And Leitner was also working at 1090 doing a talk show. And his bosses at 1090 asked him to go to Baghdad and say hi to the troops, part of this, you know, heroes thing where the military would go back. And so Leitner had to leave over Christmas for like 3 weeks or a week or whatever it was. And there happened to be three games. And so Nick Davis, who's the producer at the time, he's now a vice president at Fox Sports West up in LA. He was like, I need someone to call basketball. Who could do it? And I'm like, I'll do it. And so they said, okay, you can do it. And first game was at LMU. It was San Diego State at Loyola Marymount. It was like maybe December of 2004 or something like that. There was two other games. And so Tony Gwynn and I worked a couple of them.
How long had it been since you'd done play-by-play for anything other than baseball?
My whole life. That was actually my very first game.
I sort of flubbed.
I had done some play-by-play like at the student station in like 91, but I just did it in 04. It was three straight games. And I guess I did a pretty good job because then they hired me to do some high school football. They would do the sectional championships and a game of the week. And then Matty V started getting really big and he had to leave, and they had like 40 open games, and I'd been doing Aztecs and now some USD and the high school stuff. We were even doing Aztec baseball that they just go, will you come full time and do pre and post game and all that? So I went to my bosses at KUSI right after I'd signed another 5-year deal. So I'd signed in 2006 to be there through 2011. And I was like 3 weeks into my deal. And I just said, hey, Mr. McKinnon, who owns the station, I go, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. You know, I feel terrible. And he's like, take it, go do it. And so they were great. And
that's fantastic.
And then, yeah. Before you know it, I was doing baseball, and it was amazing.
So you were doing 40-ish Padres games a year on TV here in San Diego at that time.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. On Channel 4 San Diego. So, and my first ever appearance is funny. You'll get a kick out of this. I actually came on in relief to get the save. Matt Vasgersian had to go do poker. And this game against the Rockies on a Sunday was going a little bit longer, and it was sluggish. It was like after six innings, it was like, you know, 9-7. And he's like, my flight leaves in an hour, dude. I don't know if anyone will notice, so take over. So
wow.
I just did the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning to get my feet wet. I think I was leaving with the team a couple of days later, a week later, to fill in for the first time when they were playing in Miami. But yeah, I just finished off the game. So that was my debut. So like a player, I actually had a debut in a relief role in the back innings and locked it down for a victory. So
that was my first ever big that way.
No, not at all. So, and quite a lot, I'll tell you, I have to tell you, like, cause Maddie and I sounded a lot alike, which was probably my downfall, just the way our voices and inflection are, is like a lot of times people couldn't tell the difference between the two of us, but they loved him and they hated me. So when they knew that I was on, everybody was on top of me and hated me. But there were times when he would just be like, hey, look, I don't think anyone will know. So I'm going to go leave a day early and you do this game on Friday night. And I'd get in the office on Friday and I would go into the boss and I'd be like, well, so what'd you think of my game on Friday night? And they're like, what are you talking about? Matt did that game, right? And I'm like, no, that was actually me. So
I suppose that's a compliment if they couldn't tell the difference.
Well, in the end, I got fired, so I'm sure it wasn't much of a compliment, but at least I got 4 years out of
it. What was that experience like for you, though, the first time you kind of stepped into the press box in a play-by-play role in a major league stadium at Petco Park?
Yeah, it was really cool. You know, I mean, I was next to Mudd, Mark Grant. I was a little nervous, but the cool thing was that I was in the press box next door. And, you know, kind of doing a little practice run in the back corner, you know, with my mouth covered up. So it was kind of a smooth transition in, but it was quite euphoric when it was over. I remember going to my son, I think, had like a little league party at a round table pizza. And I went in there, I was like, yeah, I did it. You know, I remember telling my wife, I'm like, if I get hit by the trolley now, at least I made it. I got 3 innings. So, all is good. It validated every sacrifice I'd made up to that point. So it was really cool.
I imagine that traveling, doing Padres games on TV was a little bit different than maybe the traveling conditions in AAA baseball.
Yeah. In AAA baseball, so you had to wear a suit like you would with the Padres, but you had to, you'd have to wear a suit and you'd always be like in Tucson, you'd be on the first flight out, right? Because what would happen is let's say, you play a Tuesday night game in Tucson and then you got to play a night game in Vancouver the next night, right? There's very little off days and you don't travel on off days. So what would happen is you'd have to get up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, get on a suit and then get to the airport by 5. And then the plane rolls down the runway at 6 for Salt Lake. And there's never any, you know, in that league in those days, there was never any direct flights, right? So say you're going to Vancouver and you'd have to go, you know, through Salt Lake and on to Vancouver. And a lot of times you'd get there at like 4 o'clock and you'd be in your suit and then you'd have to race right to the ballpark and put a lineup together. So those travel days were like awful and you're on Delta Airlines. And meantime, you know, with the Padres, you were like, you know, you'd show up at 10 o'clock on an off day if you're going west and you get on the bus and then right on the plane and it was a charter. And, you know, you were in a suit, but, you know, they have pizza or, you know, steak from Ruth's Chris and, you know, and movies and all that. And then you'd get to the hotel and wherever you were going and your bags would be waiting for you in a nice hotel. You wouldn't be at the Ramada in Portland or, you know, Ramada in Vancouver. So it was, and you'd have, you know, more than $15 a day meal money. So it was, it was pretty fun, to be quite honest with you.
But with the career path that you took, since you never made it to Beloit specifically, but you never were riding the buses in small town America for 14 hours at a time. You kind of missed out on that step.
I did, but you know what? I'll tell you, I sort of wanted to, and I probably will have the chance next year with the Big West being a bus league. I really wanted to. I mean, that was one of the things, like I was sort of in line to be the next Quad City guy. And that was sort of the romance of the whole thing. When you're like 22 or 21 years old, you're like, this is what I want to do. I've heard all the stories and I just kept getting a better opportunity that I couldn't pass up. But part of me sort of regrets not being able to do that. Cause I've heard some hysterical stuff from people, you know, like the guy I was going to replace in Palm Springs. He used to sleep in a movie theater because he didn't make enough money. So he would go to like the late show, you know, and then sleep overnight and then wake up in the morning and go into the office, you know, and then you hear all these bus things. So I really wanted to do that. And I didn't want to do it as much in California because I'd always done it. Like when I lived in Fullerton, my buddies and I, we would actually get in the car and we'd drive to like Visalia or Fresno or Stockton and Modesto and watch games. So I sort of already had that. You know, I knew what that was all about. I sort of wanted to do it in the Midwest and see some other cities and stuff. But yeah, I never had the chance to do it, which sort of bums me out a little bit, to be honest with you. I'm not one of those guys who's like, oh, thank God I didn't have to do that. You know, I sort of wanted to do that.
We're chatting with ESPN Steve Quist on this episode of Triton Cast. And Steve, tell us, so now you're going back kind of chronologically. You're with Channel 4 in San Diego and doing Padres games and working there full time. What were you doing in the off season?
Well, the off season, so we had a show. How was the name of the show? It was called Post Game. So I hosted it with John Weisbarth and Jenny Kavnar. Jenny's now with the Rockies. And John is a national guy hosting Tiny House across the nation. So we were pretty busy. We did, once the Padres season got over, we did the high school game of the week on Thursdays, which was pretty popular. And then you have the CIF championships, and then we get into the basketball season, and we were doing Aztecs, we were doing USD, all the local home games, you know, before the W came along and the WCC packages and stuff. So we were doing that. Plus we had that show, every night at 10 o'clock. That was, a live half hour sports show about San Diego. So we were really super busy all the way through, you know, the place shutting down in 2011. I got out of there in 2010, but we had a lot to do. It was busy, and we also had shows. Like I did a show with Brady Hoke at San Diego State. I did a show with Jim Harbaugh when he was part of USD head coach there. We did a Charger show. So there was a lot. We stayed pretty busy in those days.
That's not too dissimilar to kind of your ESPN gig, which I want to get into, but in the sense that so many teams and so many different sports, how do you, nowadays when you're getting ready for a game, calling so many different sports on different networks and doing UC San Diego games for us, but also working national ESPN games, how do you kind of prep for a game or kind of make the shift in your mind from one sport to another?
It's, you know, you just got to be very disciplined, and it's all about time management, you know, and I always push that on my son in college is like, or my daughter in high school is like, if you can just find out how to time manage everything, you're going to be totally successful. So like what I'll do is at the beginning of when I get my assignment, I'll kind of put it all on a calendar, and then I'll start DVRing, you know, games so that I know, you know, what's coming up. Like if I got to go to Utah State or something, I'll make sure a month ahead of time I've got some Utah State film done. And then, you know, you just got to stay on Twitter and take breaks at work. And I have a full-time job Monday through Friday at Miramar College, where I do all the PR, but every once in a while it gets a little lax to where, you know, I can get on the Twitter and just kind of stay up with stuff. And then when you get home, you know, if I go out on my walks, go through game notes and watch videos, and it's not unlike being an NFL coach, you know, when I was covering, I was on the Charger beat for like 10 years and just sort of watching those guys, right? When the game's over, you basically have like Sunday night to just be with your family. And then the next day you start breaking down film, even late at night when the family goes to bed, man, you got to start breaking down film and all that. So it's a long process. I mean, you're always on, and you can always find something to improve yourself. Whether it's a game on TV or a book or something like that. So that's, you know, basically what I have to do. And I've been lucky and fortunate that, you know, I've only had to really deal with the CCAA, the WCC, and the Mountain West, a little bit of Pac-12 for a while. That I watch on my own, being an Arizona alum. But so it's, you know, it's four conferences. And sometimes, you know, I might miss some of the bigger stuff. I mean, I do go on podcasts for the last two radio shows that I've been on. They've asked me about like Seton Hall's front court. And I'm like, I just have to make something up because I'm like, I don't know. Seton Hall's in New Jersey and the guys are big and they dunk the basketball, you know? So you got to, you know, time management, and you got to really figure out, you know, what's important and what's not. And the more you do it, the more reps you get, you know, what's important. And in television, they always say less is more, right? So, you can always lay out, but I always pride myself on sort of knowing that little nugget when something happens. And so I like to be kind of up on as much stuff as I can.
I got to imagine that the internet has helped quite a bit too, with the fact that so many games are available, or most every game is available and streaming in some fashion. So if you are calling a game when you get home that night, you can go maybe see the games from the teams that you have next and watch the archive of those.
Yeah, without question. I mean, so now I think about it, I don't think I've ever done play-by-play on a full-time, where it wasn't, you know, minor league baseball, but I, never did a major league game or a college basketball game when the internet hasn't been around. So, you know, you've always been leading up to baseball. I'd always know my schedule ahead of time. And just when I was a fill-in guy, if I knew I was going to do the Padres and the Mets, you know, coming up a week ahead of time, I would always watch a bunch of Mets games leading up to that. Or, you know, be all over the internet for the top stories and researching that. And that's one of my favorite things. I love doing research, whether I, you know, I'll just go to a coffee shop or Panera or something and do all my research during the day. It's kind of fun. Some of the stuff that you can, you know, unearth. And then if you can somehow work it into a broadcast, I mean, that's gold, right? When you get that, when that guy hits that shot or something or does something and you're able to quickly remind everybody of, you know, what had happened before. I remember doing a Padre game one time where there was a perfect game was going on and then it ended on a walk, but the guy got picked off at first base. I think Chris Young picked the guy off at first base. And I said something like, hey, this is going to be an Ernie Shore perfect game. And everybody's like, what are you talking about? I was like, well, that remember Babe Ruth, right? Babe Ruth and Ernie Shore combined on what was like one of the first perfect games ever. Babe Ruth starts on the mound for the Red Sox, hits the first batter, gets thrown out by the umpire. Ernie yep. Shore comes in, picks the guy off at first, and then retires the next 26 in a row. And so everybody's like, wow. And I think I had just maybe 3 weeks earlier read the article about Ernie Shore. So I like when stuff like that comes together. And that's from preparation and research and all that. And then other times I'm sure you miss the obvious stuff, but it's, you know, that's broadcasting for you.
We talked a little while ago about when you were doing the Toros games, AAA baseball in Tucson, you would bust out the boombox and record your work.
Yes.
Do you critique your work now? Do you go back and watch archives of games you've done and say, oh, I really should have handled
every
this
one of them. Every one of them. So if I'm on the road for ESPN, usually it'll do the late game and then I'll come back and immediately watch it on the app. And then I have it DVR'd at home and then I'll watch it about 2 weeks later, just to, because it's always like, it's never as good as it as you think it is. It's never as bad as you think it is. And then 2 weeks later, you kind of, you get an opportunity to watch it as a regular fan would be, because you've forgotten about most of the stuff and the pace. And then you can see whether or not you really pulled the stuff off, right? Because it's almost as if you're back being the viewer yourself. So I can't tell you if I can't, I don't think there's been a single game that I've done that I haven't watch back, although the UCSD ones, not so much, just because we have a lot of them, you know, we're doing back-to-back men and women, you know, and then there's some nights when I first started doing this, there was two games on Thursday and then two games on Friday. So I never really got, and then I have to be somewhere on the WCC on Friday. So the bigger stuff, yeah, I usually watch back a couple of times, sometimes even a third time. The stuff I like, stuff I hate, I blow off the DVR. The stuff I like, and I have some of it dating back, you know, 10 years, I'll sometimes go back and watch it, you know, 10 years later and see, and either cringe or go, oh, okay, maybe I wasn't as bad as I thought I was.
This week's guest on TritonCast is Steve Quist, the voice of UC San Diego men's and women's basketball. I want to get into your time and how you got to UC San Diego in just a minute, but we haven't even touched on how you got to ESPN in the first place. How'd that come about?
So I was doing a lot of Aztec, and this is amazing because I get kids all the time that are like, how'd you do it? How'd you give me a piece of advice? And it was complete luck. I mean, I'm talking 100% luck. I did a Boise State, San Diego State game for either Channel 4 or Time Warner Cable when they first came out. When the Mountain first shut down, that was that network that had all the Aztec games. So it must have been Time Warner Cable.
Yeah, 2012, right?
Yeah, it was the Laker Channel. And they had just done some games, and there was a real competitive one that ended on it could have been a buzzer beater. Obviously the guy didn't make it from Boise State, but it was this contested game. It was a great production. And I just sent it off to Chris Farrow, who was the coordinating producer at ESPN. And I never heard anything back from him. So it must've been earlier than 2012. So it must've been a Channel 4 game in maybe 2010. And I didn't hear anything for 3 years maybe. And then one day I'm sitting in the parking lot out in front of the Payway in Rancho Bernardo, and my phone rings and it's a Charlotte number. And I'm like, what is that? I don't know anyone at Charlotte.
So at least you have a cell phone now. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I have a cell phone. Yeah. They pretty cruddy one, but, and I go, yeah, hello. And guy says, hi, I'm Chris Farrow, ESPN. I'm the coordinating producer for basketball.
And you've been on my radar for 4 or 5 years. Like your stuff. And here's a list of games, and you have 10 minutes to tell me if you can cover all of them.
Wow.
And the first one was a Gonzaga game like in November. And I'm like, yeah, I didn't even look at the schedule. I'm just like, yes, yes, yes. And at the time, I think I had just taken a full-time job with a new company, but I'm like, I don't care. I'm going to, you know, I'll just call in sick. And so I was able to navigate, you know, like a 15 game season with not much trouble, but yeah. So that, and then the rest was history. Then, you know, if you do a good job there, that was back in like 2013, maybe, or 14, might've been 14. And then, you know, I've been there ever since doing that. So that's sort of how, I got there. I was with another network prior, Compass Media Networks, doing Major League Baseball, like the game of the week, for the 11 and 12-13 season. So 2 years.
And that's radio, right?
That was radio. That was my first one. And that one was just, I read a little article in a paper about how this Compass Media Networks was going to do angel games, like 40 angel games, and they needed a broadcaster. And I just sent my stuff to the owner of the company. And like later that night, he's like, well, it's only going to cost us 55 cents a mile to have you drive to Angel Stadium every day. We got a big league guy that's 100 miles away. So boom, you're our guy. And so I did that for 2 years with like Steve Phillips and Rob Dibble, the late Daryl Hamilton. And so that was kind of my first national exposure. And that was, you know, those games would run late at night on like WFAN in New York and all these stations, you know, they come on after the Mets games and stuff like that. So I can't tell you how many people wound up hearing me. One day I was in Washington at the Washington Monument, and the old general manager of the San Diego Chargers popped out, I can't remember the guy's name. But anyway, he was there with his family, and he's like, hey, we were in New York last night. By any chance, were you doing the Angels Indians game on WFAN? I'm like, yeah, that was me. I was like, yeah, we were listening to you. So, you know, those games would come on from like 10 to 1 in the morning and give the afternoon host or the evening host at WFAN some time off. So that was a lot of fun. I really missed doing that.
Something we haven't touched on is you've kind of, through your career, you've weaved back and forth, and at times both, between radio and television. I know that it's a very different job between broadcasting a game on radio versus TV. How different is it? Do you have a preference?
I actually love doing the radio, to be honest with you, because you can talk more. It was a very hard transition at the beginning. I mean, I watch back some of those Padre games, and I didn't understand how to let it breathe, you know, and that's the most important thing, how you have to learn more when to shut up than say something when you're on television. So, I mean, I enjoy trying to fine tune both the crafts. But I do, you know, if somebody told me you were going to be stuck in the Padre radio booth or a major league booth, doing radio for the rest of your life, I'd be like, I can live with that. That's great. That's a lot of fun. Although you know, you'd make a lot more money on television, but at this point it really isn't about money. But you know, it's also sort of a dying thing. I mean, going back to what I talked about, the romance of like minor league baseball and the buses and all that, the romance of baseball on the radio is sort of kind of ended. So I don't know if that's a smart long-term play, to be honest with you, but you know, I would love to give it a try again.
Having been with Compass, as you mentioned, and certainly at ESPN, you're working with different analysts all the time. How do you kind of get to know them and their style, and how do you learn to play off one another?
Well, that's a great question, because I think part of the reason why I've had so much success is that I can adapt fairly well to guys. There's a lot of play-by-play guys that only want to work with certain people, right? Because they have the chemistry. And I don't have any fear to work with anyone. I've worked with some really good people. I've worked with some absolutely terrible people. But through the whole thing, you try and bring them along. And I think there's, you know, you can make a market for yourself if somebody's going to be like, you know what, we're going to hire Steve because we're working on a couple of analysts and he's going to be patient with them and he won't be a pain in the butt. And so I think I've done pretty well at that. And I've worked with so many people, many of them who've moved on to do bigger and better things than I ever have. but I think I just kind of have this knack of, you know, not taking it too seriously. I mean, I recall one day when I was, I learned a very valuable lesson early in my life. I was, the Suns and Lakers were playing a game. It was one of my first years in Tucson, Arizona as a sports reporter. And I was sitting in between like Jim Hill in LA and Fred Rogan, all these guys that I had grown up, watching. And I was about ready to do a live shot in between them. And man, did I screw up this live shot like you could never have imagined. It was like one of the worst things. And I'll never forget, there was a guy, rest his soul, Gary Cruz, from KCAL 9 in LA that I kind of known. And he was like, man, I've seen your stuff. You're looking great. You're doing a great job. And right in front of him, I screwed this live job up. After he goes, man, I'm sorry, you're terrible. You're absolutely terrible. I take back everything I said. So I screwed this up and I was really mad, and I was in the back and I was kicking stuff and in the press room, and overcame one of the local guys from the Phoenix station. He goes, hey man, we're not landing airplanes here. You didn't kill 130 people, right? Just go back out there at 10 o'clock and do it again. So that's sort of always the philosophy that I've lived with. And so when you stick me with someone who might not be that good, it's like, let's try and make it the best. I can adapt. And if it isn't any good, you know, we've just got another rep tomorrow to get better. So, but it is hard. And, you know, I've worked with my fair share of prima donnas, and, you know, my fair share of people that work super, super hard and get rewarded. So it's, you know, it's, and I've worked with, you know, I was working, my first stint at ESPN was with Michelle Obama's brother, Craig Robinson, who was Oregon State's head coach. So that was sort of a unique challenge too, because, you know, we were trying to get to know each other, and everywhere they would send us, like, people would come over and just want to talk about, you know, his brother-in-law, the president, and his sister, you know, Michelle. And it was sort of like some days we could barely get on air because everybody wanted to come over. And that was the time, you know, Obama was in office still. So sometimes the phone would ring, you know, or I could see him text, and he was actually texting, you know, President Obama, who was watching our, you know,
wow,
midnight Eastern start, you know, or 10 o'clock Eastern start. So you're like, talk about pressure, you know. I mean, there's two games, you know, I've known that Obama was watching one, and then there was probably the very last one I did on March 10th when LeBron James's kid was playing in the state championship game or the regional championship game against Etiwanda. And, you know, LeBron was at every single game, but he couldn't be at this one because the Lakers were playing the Nets. They were hosting them. And I could only imagine, the game went to halftime when we were going to the final commercial break. And I'm like, I bet you LeBron's in there watching us, you know, watching the end of this game, for goodness sakes. And it ended on a Zaire Williams buzzer beater. So right before the second half had even started. So I'm probably like, you know, we probably had some big time celebrities watching then.
So one more question on ESPN, and certainly we want to talk about your time at UC San Diego. And of course, sure. Here we are 50 minutes in, and we haven't even mentioned the global pandemic that's we are all living under and trying to stay safe from right now. So we want to touch on those two things in the remaining minutes. But last ESPN question is, how do you get assignments, or how does that work? Obviously, they've got so many broadcasters, play-by-play broadcasters and analysts all over the country, and under normal times, they have thousands and thousands of live events. So how do you kind of remind them that you exist? And do they just send you a list of games and say, here's what you're doing? Or is there a discussion, or how does that work?
No, it's usually like, you usually get an email about September where they're like, hey, everybody, you know, basketball's starting soon. We'll have assignments out. You sort of have to stay on the coordinating producers and just, you know, check in every once in a while. And usually I'm one of the last ones to get a schedule, but they'll usually send me a schedule by mid-October and say, can you do all this? And it'll be 15 games, and you say yes or no. And then as you adjust, games get bigger. You might get called off of one. You might get put on another one. You know, before Chris Farrow moved on from ESPN, he was really good about, I was sort of his fill-in guy wherever, you know, somebody got sick or moved on a game. I was usually one of the first people he would call, and he could plug me in somewhere. So I might have 15 games, but then he might give me another 5 or 6. So you just get it on an email in October. In October, you're just like, boy, I hope this is the year that they continue to, you know, I hope this is another year where they bring me back. So it's, you know, and there have been years where all I've gotten, I haven't even spoken to anyone. You just get a, get a link with your travel and how to get paid and all that. And you just say, yeah, I'm ready to do it, and book your travel and turn in your invoices. And there you go.
So here we are as we record this, the Tritons are getting set to move into Division One in the Big West Conference. You joined UC San Diego broadcasts in 2016, if I'm not mistaken. How did that happen? And how did you end up doing Tritons hoops?
Well, so Mark Neville, who runs the Holiday Bowl, has long been a friend of mine. And I've always been trying to transition to from just doing basketball exclusively for ESPN to football, because I just stayed high school football championships. I've done Aztec football, and I'm looking for a college schedule. I just can't get anyone to hire me to do it. So I've always been on Mark, because Mark, the Holiday Bowl had the ESPN contract, and he knew all the coordinating producers. And so he was sort of setting me up. So he knew I was looking for some stuff to do football wise, not really basketball wise, but then, the Tritons were going to launch UCSD Tritons Television, and they wanted more of a known play-by-play guy. And so Ken Gross, who was there prior, who's now retired, super nice guy, had, you know, gone through the whole Division II, even the back to Division III. I didn't know Ken. He didn't really know me. But Mark, he went to Mark and he said, Mark, I need an announcer who would do it. And he goes, Steve's always interested in doing stuff. So Ken and I sat down, and at the time he said it was going to be a radio package. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. I'll do some radio. I'm doing TV. I'm mixing the radio. That'll be cool. And it turned out to be Triton TV from, 15, 16. It was sort of primitive. And he just said, look, you want to do it? And the money was, it's never been about money for me. It wasn't, big time ESPN money. It was a little bit of money, but money's money. And I said, yeah, I'll do it for you. But, I have to make I was working for you at the time, the WCC, and also ESPN stuff. So I'm like, look, that's the big money stuff. And I don't want to, tell them I can't do it to come here. Would that be okay? And he's like, whatever you can do, that's great. And boy, back then we played a lot, like Thursday, or maybe it was Friday, Saturday games. And it was back-to-back doubleheaders. It was like, between men and women, it was four games over 2 days, and the schedule just worked out perfectly. So I started doing that, and the more sports they did, and I did soccer for you guys and baseball and all that. And always kind of figured, I always had my eye on that Division One. I probably wouldn't have done it if the announcement hadn't come that they were going to be Division One. But I was starting to look, and I was like, to Ken, I'm like, you know what? This would be perfect because, I'm going to turn 50 the year that they hit the court for Division One, and usually guys, on television don't make it that long. So it'll be a good little retirement job, right? And then I can bounce around the Big West doing radio and what have you, and let me do it and see what happens. And so I took it, and boy, it's been great. And then you can't come along, and Richard comes along in the athletic department, and Earl's there, and I've known Earl for a long time, so it's just like a little happy family right there. So I'm really glad that I took it all those years ago, because it has such great potential now, and never in a million years that I think I was going to be on, doing it on ESPN3. And if you look at our broadcast compared to the ones that I'm on for regular ESPN, they're almost exactly the same. We don't have all the bells and whistles. One day we will. But I'll put our broadcast up against anybody else's locally.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about. I mean, in the time that you've been here in these 5 years or so doing UC San Diego games, it's come about that the program is moving to Division One, which is of course underway now and happening this summer when playing the Big West Conference this fall. But I got to imagine, as a someone who's around the program but not intimately involved on a day-to-day basis, you've seen quite a few changes in not only these broadcast productions, but facility enhancements and so on. It's got to be kind of cool to be a part of it, no?
No, it really is. And I was so hyper local when I first came to the market, like in 2000, that I sent a camera over all the time to do UCSD basketball. And they would always be like, they forget to call in the score because they're like, we never had like a local television camera come over and and shoot our games, right? And then I don't know if anybody even had websites there where we could find the score. You know, a lot of times we just have to play two plays and put the score, you know, the partial score up, you know, 55-53 in the second half and nobody called in the score, that kind of thing. So I've always sort of been around it. And then I remember a couple of years into my stay, I think the women won the national championship in soccer, which was a big deal, one of their first years in Division II. So I've always been around and seen the program. And I've been out there quite a bit because the Chargers, that was their training facility for the first, you know, 3 years that I was here until they moved to Carson. So I was like on that campus, impressed every single day on that field back behind RE/MAC Arena. I was on there every day, you know, covering Breeze and LaDainian Tomlinson and then eventually Rivers and that kind of stuff. And Ryan Leaf, for goodness sakes. But yeah, I've always been kind of impressed and saw that it was a, you know, kind of a diamond in the rough. And when I grew up, I was a big Cal State Fullerton fan and a season ticket holder when I was younger. And they were in the PCAA, which moved on to be the Big West. And so I've been around Big West basketball for, God, it's coming up on 40 years, to be honest with you. I think I went to my first game in 79. So I would have been 9 years old, 8 or 9 years old. So I'm really excited about that. And I see the league grow. And heck, the league had football when I, you know, in the 70s and 80s when I was a kid. But to see it kind of resurge with its basketball is really cool. It's a cool league.
One thing I didn't get a chance to ask you about as well, as I know now you fill in as an anchor on KFMB Channel 8 here in San Diego.
Yeah.
So how do you have time to ever see your wife and kids?
Well, a lot of times they don't want to see me, to be honest with you. You know, I'm one of my sons. My oldest son goes to University of Arizona, so he's not around much. But you know, we, and my wife teaches, but we can do lunches, and, you know, they come over to games sometimes and all that. And I don't take a lot of, you know, at Channel 8, I have to, you know, I have to approve the schedule and everything. So I don't take a lot of dates that conflict with family stuff. But for the most part, if it's just a regular night and I can make an extra few hundred dollars so my wife can have another purse, come, you know, the end of the month, she's all for it, man. She's like, play ball. Let's go, man. Do as many games as you can because mama needs shutters.
Does she actually have a list of things she needs?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I can. As a matter of fact, I can read it to you right now. I'm looking, you know, what was the last that we did? Shutters and then blinds. And now, I don't know, we're going to do some pillow covers. So, yeah, it's nuts, man.
So other than the obvious of not calling games because games aren't being played these days as we record this in late May due to COVID-19, how do you, the sports world has changed quite a bit. Kind of what do you see maybe down the road? Not that any of us know for sure, but as far as how different things might be.
Yeah. I mean, I got really, really worried, to be honest with you, when you know, we did that last game I talked to you about, that Sierra Canyon Etiwanda game, which was March the 10th leading up to the high school tournament, and it got canceled. I felt terrible for, you know, all the freelancers. What a lot of people don't realize is when you get into an ESPN truck, you know, there's probably only one or two people that are full-time. Some shows, nobody's full-time. Everybody is a freelancer and everybody's getting paid per game. And so I'm a freelancer there. I'm just lucky that I have a Monday through Friday job. So it sort of halted everybody's careers. And I was super worried because I'm not sure when we're going to get back. We did see, I think NASCAR this past weekend with the race at Darlington, their Real Heroes 400, kind of pulled the curtain back. If you saw the start of that broadcast and saw how, you know, they had guys doing the graphics that were 6 feet apart in Los Angeles. Meantime, in South Carolina, there was the race, and in North Carolina was the announce crews. I see the industry being a lot like that until we get a vaccine. And then I also sort of see the business kind of all getting back at once. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if we just started every single season in January. It wouldn't surprise me if there was no baseball this year and that we started college basketball and college football and all that in January. And then, you know, those freelancers are going to be booked for so many events, they'll make all that money back. I feel a little bit bad for the fans because I think it's going to be a little while before fans get back into venues. But I think at this point, we've all been starved enough of local sports that we're like, look, we'll just take it live without fans
on television right now until we can, you know, until there's a vaccine or it's safe enough to get back in there. And I'm thankful that in San Diego, we haven't been hit too hard by this whole thing, you know, outside of like New York and those other places, which I feel really bad for.
Scary stuff for sure. Final moments with Steve Quist of ESPN and the voice of UC San Diego men's and women's basketball. Other than signing the lifetime contract to keep doing Triton's games, what's next for you, or what's left for you to accomplish professionally?
Well, I'd actually like to do a little bit of football. You know, my ideal thing would be to get a few games, you know, maybe 6 games in the fall right into UCSD. And then, you know, I would actually love it if in a few years we started traveling and doing radio games, so we could do games at home on E3 and radio games. So I have more to do. But I think, you know, I think I'm getting too old for doing baseball, though. I wouldn't mind doing some fill-in stuff. But I think, you know, I've carved out a pretty good career. Every time I feel bad because I don't get a big job or something or a big assignment, I always look back and go, well, but you know, but you did have 110 of them this year. So you can't feel too bad for yourself. But I think, you know, and just today I tried to reach out for some ESPN and some CBS football stuff in the fall, if we ever get back in the fall. And who's to say if I'm right about us all coming back in January, then, you know, announcers like me might have the pick of what we want to do in January, because they're going to be a need for so many of us. They might not have enough TV networks to broadcast all these games, to be honest with you.
Well, we're out of time, even though it's a podcast and time is unlimited. But Steve, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks. I hope I didn't bore everyone to death.
Always a pleasure to hear from Steve Quist, and what an interesting journey he's had in his career. I mean, when you look back and see how far he's come from the days he was even moonlighting as the mascot, I guess if we needed King Triton, we could just ask Steve to be our new King Triton.
Yeah, absolutely. I need to pressure him to find these Tuffy the Toro photos. You're right, Jenny. I mean, and I thought it was impressive too, how he had in his mind that he wanted to be a Major League Baseball broadcaster, and he made San Diego his destination, and he got to San Diego and he ended up broadcasting games for the Padres. A very driven, very dedicated, and clearly a hard worker.
Right. It's incredible to see when somebody has a dream in mind so early on and they set out to achieve that goal, and they do. It's really awesome, and it couldn't come for a better person than Steve.
No question. And he's so modest too. I mean, he told us about how he quote unquote lucked into the ESPN job, but that's not the case. I mean, it was persistence and hard work, to be sure.
Right. We are very fortunate to have him. And yeah, that's an incredible journey that he's had.
We'll look ahead to our next episode, episode 4, coming your way next week. And this one's going to be fun. It'll be a conversation with women's soccer alum Itzel Gonzalez, a former standout goalkeeper for the Tritons. Fascinating story. She started her career as a construction engineer after graduation, but put that on pause and went to become a goalkeeper for Tijuana in La Liga MX. And she tells us about that experience, starting that National Women's Soccer League, and then how she pursued a spot on the Mexican women's national team and the thrill of what it was like to get that call up. New episode of Triton Cast premiere each Wednesday.
Thanks so much for listening today. If you enjoyed the show, make sure that you subscribe, rate, and review Triton Cast on the podcast platform of your choice. Also, follow us on Twitter at TritonCast and email us any feedback to TritonCast@UCSD.edu. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to TritonCast. TritonCast is a production of UC San Diego Athletics Communications. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on your platform of choice. If you have show questions or comments or suggestions for future guests, email us at TritonCast@UCSD.edu. You can also follow the show on Twitter at TritonCast.